This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Clouds so swift, the rain won't lift. Gate won't close, the railings froze. Get your minds off winter time. You ain't going nowhere. Ooh-wee, ready high. Tomorrow's the day my bride's gonna come.
Laura Hurwitz here, and welcome to Mightier Than the Sword on the Easy Chair podcast. I'm here, as always, with my wonderful sidekick, Stephanie Spaulding.
Hi, everybody.
Steph, how was your Easter?
Oh, it was great. It's really nice that spring is in the air now. It's a late Easter, so we actually get nice weather, I think.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day. Mm-hmm. For the first time in years and years, I did an Easter egg hunt at my sister's house. It's kind of fun to do that as an adult, you know?
Was it the plastic kind that you were hunting for, or actually dyed eggs?
Not actual dyed eggs. I take that back. We were looking for jelly beans.
Oh, okay.
Which are perhaps my least favorite candy.
Yeah, I wouldn't eat that.
Yeah, I kind of didn't. In fact, there were people leaving the black licorice jelly beans.
Oh, some people like those.
No one in my family, apparently. Okay. But they're very good to hide because you can camouflage them. So it becomes part of people were saying, oh, there's a jelly bean, but not even picking it up.
Were you trying to get the highest count? Was that the...
Yeah, and then after all the candy was gotten, we just put it all in a big bag and nobody really wanted the bag.
Yeah, okay.
Because that kind of happens, you know?
It's probably been 20 years since I ate a jelly bean.
I find them not even tempting.
No. Do you remember those marshmallow eggs?
Yes.
They're like kind of large and they... Yes. Yeah.
I do.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
The kind of a hardest shell on the outside. Yep. And then, wow, talk about a blast from the past.
Those were good.
Do they still make those?
I do not
probably
believe so.
Maybe not.
Maybe somewhere, but I've never seen them. I haven't seen them because I would certainly get those.
Thinking about them from now, I can like virtually taste that weird, distinct taste that they have.
My mom used to always get the marshmallow peeps. And she would put out the baskets, like, I think the day before, but she'd hide them in her closet.
Uh-huh.
So they would have enough time to get hard.
They
oxidize, it's just...
They get their crust.
They form a crust.
So she would take them out of the package.
Yes. They were virtually inedible. But I remember being really surprised having a fresh peep.
Oh, you eventually tasted one.
Right. And it was like, whoa, I like these, you know?
I've actually never eaten one.
You maybe someday just to...
Yeah, I think it's too late. I think I passed the window.
Well, there's really... I mean, basically it's a marshmallow with sugar on the outside.
Yeah. I had a roommate once who loved peeps, and she would make peep s'mores. And she would like have peeps like all year round. I guess you can get them all year round. And they make different holiday peeps now. Probably once upon a time you could only get peeps in one, like the Cadbury egg window. But now I think you can get them whenever you want them.
There's something about Easter. Like as a kid, I remember thinking it was like a second-rate Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that happens to a lot of kids and people who don't necessarily get the church version. And like, I honestly, as a kid, I didn't know what Easter was except for like the Easter bunny. And with no religious context, that's just weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's this holiday in the middle of nowhere where you have an Easter chocolate bunny, rabbit, and weird candy, and that's it. Like, that's all you know. It's like, okay, this is a holiday.
Right, and the whole concept of a rabbit hopping around and delivering candy, why would a rabbit have anything to do with chocolate or candy or eggs, for that matter?
I could tell you a tragic story of an Easter that we had when I was a kid. So my brother and I would usually get some sort of small chocolate rabbit, like the kind that comes in a box. And we were probably like 5 and 6 or something. And we had our Easter candy hunt in the morning and then gone to my grandmother's house for lunch. And then we came back, we found out that there had been a squirrel in the house. And there was just one victim. And that was my brother's chocolate Easter rabbit, which had been like massacred by the squirrel. It was awful. He was so upset. He's still not over it.
That is a very tragic story.
A very tragic story, except it ends in a more tragic way, too, because the squirrel didn't make it past the Easter day.
Really?
My dad made sure that
oh, your dad. I was...
with his shotgun.
See, I did not know where that was going.
Yeah. Maybe it was a BB gun. Whatever it was, the squirrel didn't make it. Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell me that squirrels, like dogs, are allergic to chocolate and the squirrel died of
gastro. No, I don't think they're allergic to chocolate. They'll come back for more.
Not after the shotgun.
No.
Stephanie, I had this idea for today, and it's kind of based on a memoir I was reading, and I think I discussed it last time. It's my college roommate, Tama Janowitz's memoir, and it's called Scream. And I found it extremely interesting, and I think it's not just because I know Tama.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a very interesting memoir in and of itself. But she has a paragraph in here, made me think a little bit about what I write and what I read. And I don't know. I just found it interesting, okay. And I'd love to know your thoughts.
Okay.
Okay. Tama says, she likes to read about anybody who's a loser, an idiot, a victim, or engaged in a basic struggle for survival. I'm there. When I read a book, I just want a bunch of interesting stuff to happen, adventure-wise, like In Cold Blood, without too much musing and thinking and philosophizing. I don't want a moment of epiphany. I want to go someplace worse, different, more interesting than where I am. So when I stop reading, I can feel good, even if I'm in a cramped economy seat on an overnight flight or in a filthy kitchen where I should be doing the dishes. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of truth in that. There's a real attraction, the escapism. It's always a relief to read about those who are worse off than we are, to, you know, be, quote, entertained by those stories, which make us feel that our lives aren't so tragic. So based on that comparison, and I think she's got two separate things going on, maybe in that description, the idea of just pure escapism. And then this sort of, the first part alludes to the escaping to a worse place.
Yes.
So not looking for inspiration or aspiration, but just looking for pure escapism or a contrasting version that can make you feel better about your own state.
One thing I found kind of interesting about it, when I first read it, I thought, oh, I'm nothing like that because, I mean, I basically write YA. And YA is all aspirational.
Yeah.
And there is an epiphany, usually. Mm-hmm. And usually there's a triumph and an overcoming of,
yes.
You know? So I kept thinking, well, you know, that's kind of the opposite of the way I want to write or what I like to read. But then I realized that's actually not true. Because my favorite parts of books that I've read, like, for example, Jane Eyre. My favorite part of that book is when she's in the orphanage and she's starving.
Right.
I love that part of that book. And that is her at her lowest. And it does make me feel better about my own situation, no matter what that situation is. It's like a, oh, I think I have it bad. Well, listen to this.
Yeah. I think for me that when I go on YouTube and I'm just watching videos, it almost doesn't matter what. It's like that same escapist kind of mentality. And I only recently sort of got hooked on, like, you know, coming home at the end of the day and just like throwing on YouTube and just like clicking around and seeing what's interesting, what's on there for interesting stories, because I just find so many interesting narratives and so many interesting stories that I could just watch it for hours.
Well, do you agree with the part about not wanting too much musing, philosophizing, thinking about it? Does that resonate with you? Just kind of wanting to see the action.
Yeah, I don't know. Does she mean that she doesn't want a reflective narration? She just wants to have straight on action presented?
It sounds like that to me, although the example of In Cold Blood, I felt like there is a certain amount of reflection in that book. I mean, there's definitely a lot of action and a lot of talking, a lot of dialogue that kind of propels it. But there's also reflection.
Yeah.
But I do think that she's saying that really what matters is the engagement, the excitement.
Yeah.
And you know, if something interesting happens, that makes it interesting.
Probably the one challenge for authors and producers and directors is finding stories that have both, telling stories that have action, interest, I guess, pathos, and then also sort of balancing that. So stories that have the exciting story, the kind of like what you might call mindless entertainment side, but then have layers so that it can be appreciated in a deeper way as well. So some people might look at it and say, oh yeah, I was entertained. And then some people might look at it and say, wow, what a deep story. That would be like the true talent if you could pull that off.
Yeah, I agree. I'm trying to think of a book that I've read recently where that is pulled off. You know, it sort of operates on both, on many levels in that way.
So that it could be like whatever the consumer or the reader wants it to be, to take out of it, rather than just, you know, so it's sort of like a chameleon in some ways to just fit whatever is expected or whatever is desired.
I kind of feel like The Goldfinch was a little bit that way, because there was a lot of stuff happening and it was a lot of strange stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of stuff was examined and a lot of stuff wasn't particularly examined. But then at the end, you definitely were able to sort of muse on things and just sort of on the human condition. And I think that you felt that you learned something, and also that you'd enjoyed yourself, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of popular fiction aims to be, not just entertaining stories, because that is, you know, on the trashy side, but also to have some level, something deeper as well, so that you can like be a proper book club selection.
Yeah. And I do think that just as human beings, we are a little bit drawn. Schadenfreude?
Right.
You kind of do like to hear that stuff. And it's almost like if something bad happens to someone else, it won't happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a relief in it, which is kind of sucky.
We see our fears played out in other people's lives, and that lets us cope with our own, maybe.
Yeah. Well, okay, I just was really struck by that paragraph because when I first read it, I really did have this kind of, oh, not me. You know, I'm basically the opposite of that. And I just know as a person, Tama is, and I was kind of like the glass half full and she was the glass half empty. That was just the way we were. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of thinking that as older adults, you know, we're still in those roles. But now that I think of it, no, we're both kind of just human beings.
Right. Well, I think that's it. Nobody has one preference or one taste all the time. Yeah. So even just saying I like X or I like Y, I mean, we're never going to just like one thing all the time. We're going to want different kinds of things at different times.
Okay. That was good. That was something that was on my mind. I'm going to break in here with a quick word from this week's sponsor, Quip Electric Toothbrushes. It's time for spring cleaning, and Quip's got a way to start with your brushing habits. Just 2 minutes a day, twice a day, can help pave the way to a healthier mouth and mind. And now, here's a newsflash, the whole family can get refreshed with Quip. The new Kids Quip has the same 2-minute timer and guiding pulses as the original version, with no childish gimmicks, so kids can brush just like adults. The kids' version is just tweaked down for kid-sized mouths, and kids are inspired to brush better and more often with oral care that looks and feels like the products the adults in their lives use. I mean, think about kids playing with your cell phone. All right, you got the picture. They can also benefit from the sensitive sonic vibrations for an effective clean that's always gentle on sensitive gums. I'm about to go on a trip down to North Carolina, and I am going to be taking my Quip with me. In fact, it's packed and in my suitcase as I speak. That's why I love Quip, and that's why over 1 million happy, healthy mouths do too. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/easychair right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/easychair. And now, back to the podcast. And the other thing that was on my mind, I'm kind of blindsiding you all over the place. Today, as I was writing at my computer, I was thinking about all the ways that I procrastinate and all the ways I stop myself from doing work.
Oh.
And I was kind of wondering, I mean, okay, for me, I'll tell you what mine are. I look at the news obsessively because I'm on the computer and it's right there. The other thing I've been doing recently is looking at real estate.
Ah, yes.
But I don't even know why, and I'm not in the market to buy anything. I mean, it's just
that
like
can
stupid.
Be a little addictive, I think, for people looking at real estate listings.
That's it,
and I'm really curious too because it impacts our own house values as well. So I think that's why, because I'm never going to buy another house, hopefully, and I still look at it sometimes because I want to see what it's like. It's kind of like that voyeurism too. Like I want to see what other people have. You know, you see the house on the outside, and you're like, oh, now I get to see inside.
That is exactly. And for me, it's not the house value at all. I hardly pay attention to the numbers, and I'm just like, ooh, well, let me look at their living room and what's their kitchen like. I will come to the end of an idea, or I'll be struggling with something, and it's almost like reflex. Mm-hmm. I'll just click Google News or Zillow.
You know? There must be something in our human nature, in our programming, that makes us tend towards that ability to fill our time and to look for those filler activities, whether it's smoking or checking your phone or going on news sites. We like those. And it's distraction, of course, but there must be something in our programming. I wonder which one of our primal evolutionary survival needs that filled. I can't imagine what the hunter-gatherer version of that was.
It's just, and I don't know. For me, I keep thinking it serves a purpose, you know, like you're saying, part of our evolutionary need. I mean, I feel like maybe it will spark an idea. Mm. It'll get me thinking about something else, or maybe it will offer me an excuse so I can stop working.
Yeah. I suspect we might get a slight dopamine fix off of that stuff, because even like looking at bad news like that will fire off some neurons probably. See, when we look at those like scandalous things, or we're looking for something that's gonna like get our hackles up, probably that there's some like reward probably there.
That is such a weird thing to think of, but I think you're I'm just thinking of like, what is it? I know that it's some kind of like scientific experiment where, not Pavlov's dogs, but like is it like shocking the monkey?
I think we're almost like, I feel like a lot of our friends there have been caught up in this like liberal depression during Trump time. Yeah. And now, so like, we'll go and we'll see, like, we want to go and see what bad thing Trump did now. And then we can be shocked and horrified. Yeah. And so we feel a reward. It's almost like a pain, almost like self-injury or something. Cause you go and you look and you're like, oh, I'm so mad now. And we're like almost addicted to that, I think. It's like, I don't know whether it's shock or what it is, but it's like, I want to know. And it's also, I want to be the first one to know so I can tell everybody else this bad thing.
I mean, when I'm driving in the car and it's a story about New York City subways, I don't care, you know? Right. Then I'll start looking around for NPR or something to, you know, the minute I hear Mueller report, I'm like, okay, all right, I'm listening.
We want to get our fix. So there is something addictive about that pattern.
Right. And the anger does feel like something, you know, because a lot of the time I walk around feeling kind of confused and sad, and the anger feels more purposeful.
Yeah, we do tend to think that anger is constructive. Really, they're all emotions really are equal opportunity. Like none of them are good, bad, or productive. We can think of anger as more productive, but it's not.
It feels.
It does feel, yeah.
It feels productive.
Yeah.
And I think actually when I'm writing, sometimes accessing anger, even when telling a story, I mean, to me, that propels a narrative like nobody's business. Stephanie, we have had quite the podcast.
Yeah, this we've been all over the place, but that's good.
Oh, well, I really am happy that I was able to surprise you with everything that
I said. Good topics. Well done. Because I didn't come with anything to talk about, so.
It's the best when I can like throw things at you and you field things with such grace and such ease.
Thank you. Very
impressive. It really is. Okay, next time maybe we'll talk a little more about book groups.
Yeah, we should definitely do another book group podcast.
Yeah, we've gotten some real feedback from that. Mm-hmm. And I think book groups struggle with a lot of the issues that we've touched on, but we can go into them more deeply.
Yes. And so if you have a book group, write into us with your book group challenges, your book group problems. What is your book group struggle?
Oh, God, that's perfect. Yes.
And we will answer those questions.
We will. So write in to easychairpodcast@gmail.com and Steph and I will read your email on the air. And the growling you hear in the background is Charlie. He's on my lap because he tends to bark at delivery people, and I was afraid he was going to lose it earlier. So, Well, Stephanie,
it's not our stomachs.
It's not our stomachs, although mine could be doing that. It totally could be. But until next time.
All right. See you later, everybody.
See ya. That was a HeadGum Podcast.